Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Night Court. I'm Rob Fisher on Twitter at The Fish Nation. He is Brevin Knight on Twitter at BrevinKnight22. The show is on Twitter at NightCourt22. Glad you are with us. We got to recap Game 6 and just couldn't put a wrap on the season and talk about the other NBA playoffs. We'll be done in about 5 minutes, so just bear with us. What's up, BK?
Oh, man, nothing much, man. Enjoying a beautiful, beautiful, sunny, little windy day, but life is great.
Life is great. We've had a couple of days to kind of process.
Yes.
Get away from it a little bit. The end of the season is always tough. It's weird. It's a change in our lives just from what we do for 6 months.
Yes.
You know, I mean, the routines of going to the arena or going to the airport or being on the road. It just suddenly changes and ends, and it makes it very tough. And it's awesome to see the responses from people that we've gotten, like on Twitter, and responses from people that we get in person, about the TV show, about the podcast, whatever. That's always, very grateful for that too.
Yeah. So it's always good to hear that we affect people in a positive way, that they enjoy the telecast. That one thing for me is people always talk about they learn something, but they also have fun. And that's what I think we aim to do. We want to educate and entertain. That's the big thing. So it's nice to hear people say that. And it's always tough because the ending is abrupt. And it's a good and bad thing because there used to be a time when you knew when the ending was.
Yeah, January, when you know that you can make plans for like April 16th because the season ends on the 15th, those seasons suck.
Those are not good. These seasons are tough because the game is over, and that's it. So because it was over on the road, we don't get to say goodbye to a lot of the people that were in the arena. You don't get to really see everyone the way you would like to. And so that abruptness of the end of the season is something that I think takes us all by shock at first. And then we got to settle into our, what I call, our real lives for 5.5 months.
You turn into a unprofessional golfer.
Professional amateur.
Professional amateur golfer, and I turn into Hatchet Man.
I'm going to do a little Hatchet.
You're going to be Hatchet Man a little bit?
Not Hatchet Man. I'm going to be Lawnmower Man.
Oh, really?
Lawnmower Man. I'm going to cut the lawn this summer. And when we do our podcast, because I told the people we will do, we'll do a couple episodes a month.
Sure.
But during the summer, I'm going to have a report on how much I am enjoying getting back to getting dirty in the yard.
Let me tell you something. I think his cutting grass days will last about a month. And then it'll be one of those hot August days. He's going to be miserable, and it's just going to be terrible. He's going to get grass all over himself.
Kick the lawnmower.
He's going to kick the lawnmower. And then he's going to say, who's that guy? Who's that guy that said he's headed somebody?
Call the bait and the lawn people back again.
A month. I give it a month. All right, let's talk about Game 7 for a moment. Game 6.
I wish it was
unfortunately,
game 7.
No Game 7, yeah. And mainly we'll talk more about, I guess the season and what's coming ahead for the Grizzlies. But Game 6 was awful. I mean, I don't even know how to explain it. All the shows that we've done, I've had the box score in front of us so we can kind of look. There's no reason to even bring it.
No.
We lost by 40. It was not a it was not a strong showing. It was not a strong effort. And, you lost by 40. Frankly, I think an embarrassing game.
Embarrassing and unexpected.
Yeah.
I thought that because they had played so well in L.A. for the season, even during the regular season, didn't win, but competed well.
Outplayed them for most of the games.
Exactly. And then in Game 3, you knew that was coming in Game 3. But Game 4, I thought, would have been the nail in the coffin to say, yo, we really can win here. And so to come back home with the Game 5 effort, you just thought that we would see a little bit more fight from them in Game 6. And What it went to show you is just, it takes a lot to win in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be thick-skinned, you have to be dialed in, and that means every possession. And I think the more playing against the Warriors last year in the play-in situation, being able to beat, 2 years ago,
yeah,
in the bubble, then being able to win against Minnesota to come back and win that series, you learn. But then to play against the Lakers now in a seven-game series was eye-opening, I think, to them in terms of LeBron James and what he's able to do, not just as an individual, but how he empowers his teammates.
It was it's a series that I think first and foremost credit to the Los Angeles Lakers. They were good. They were, yes, really good. They were the better team in this series, and they certainly earned it. But with that being said, I don't think the Grizzlies played well. You had too many guys who didn't play well on the nights that you lost.
We had too many guys for the entire series not play well.
Yeah.
I mean, for Tyus Jones and Dylan Brooks to have the type series that they had was uncharacteristic. You don't see those type shooting numbers. You don't see the lack of making winning plays that change the game. That's something that we always could count on from the two of them. I don't care what was going on. Somehow, some way, they would make a winning play that affected the game. And in that series, we didn't get it. And being down Steven and being down Brandon put so much more pressure on everyone else to have to up their game every night, every possession.
Yeah, and I kept going back to the two things I said before the series. You got to win on the road, and boy, how game four could have just changed the series, turned it upside down. I mean, that's what the playoffs are all about. Same thing in the Sacramento Golden State series. You know, you have an overtime game that could change the whole thing the other way. And they couldn't get it done there. So just not able to win on the road. You knew you have to win on the road in the postseason. Can't do it. And I don't know, Brevin. I keep going back, and it's the simple thing. But I think you should regret it, how you finished the season compared to how they finished the season. They were playing hard. They were playing to win. They were playing playoff game intensity every night, getting dialed in, getting focused. So when the playoffs came, they were there already. Grizzlies were juggling lineups. They were resting guys. They threw a couple of games away.
Ja was coming back still in some way.
So did you feel good about where the team was when you went into the playoffs? Did you feel? Wasn't it more a feeling of, okay, this is what we're capable of doing? Because they weren't doing that heading into the playoffs. We didn't see it.
No, I think we all were banking on the fact that the playoffs would kind of spark everyone again. It felt like the team needed a spark. It felt like there was such a cloud over towards the end of the year with everything that was happening off the court, stuff that was missing. There was a cloud, and it felt like maybe the playoffs could just be that ray of sunlight that was through the clouds because it was a new season. And so I think that's what gave everyone, including us, the hope that we would then see them. And we weren't able to get it. So Jaren in one game in game one, but really didn't see full Jaren after that.
Mm-hmm.
Dez didn't really get himself going until game four. So there were so many ups and downs when you had such a small margin of error already,
right,
that didn't allow them to win. And then the other thing was the Lakers didn't give them a chance. Their defense was fantastic. They played it exactly how they wanted to do, and they got individual performances when they needed it.
Right. We didn't talk about it in the last episode, but Dylan got fined for not talking to the media after two consecutive games. Ja also one night did not speak with the media. Certainly it was just, as you pointed out when we briefly discussed it, just another thing that can hang over the team's head of, you know, things that are going to be talked about, headlines that are going to be out there. Well, now that it's happened, and it was not a good look for this team that has talked a lot.
It wasn't good, and it was another distraction that was not needed at the time. And so, were they frustrated? I understand your frustration, but there's also an obligation. And when you win, you go up there and you sit and you answer and you whatever. When you lose, you go up there and you answer, and then you move forward. And so, we talk about growth and maturity. That's just another level of it, and understanding that Hey, listen, all of us that talk, we all talk. I was a talker. When you're a talker, there're gonna be days when you're on top as a talker, and there's gonna be days where you gotta suck it up and take it. Now, that's just the nature of sports. Mm-hmm. We go through that during a game that happens. So right. So I thought that it was the wrong move for the both of them to not go to the podium, because it just, again, it allowed another distraction to this team.
Yeah. And Frank, Dylan being the guy that was talking, certainly that's who people wanted to hear from. And Ja, he's the leader of the team.
Yes.
And ducked it. So I'm with you. That was, I didn't like that. And I didn't like it, for the other guys, because the other guys are now the ones that have to go talk.
And they're the ones that have to answer the questions for you.
Yeah.
And that's not, when you ascend to that role on the team, you're put there and you're in that position to lighten the roles of everyone else.
Yeah.
Because you are who you are, you can make the game easier for others. And I thought we just didn't do a good job of making the game easier.
Right.
For the others.
All right, so now we have the exit interviews. Those were yesterday. We're recording this on Monday. Exit interviews were on Sunday. Zach Kleiman was interesting. One thing that was really interesting, he said they're going to be really aggressive this summer. I think they were really aggressive at the trade deadline, just right. weren't able to get what they wanted.
Right.
And I envision them being very aggressive, because I think this team – it showed, all right, we've been number two now 2 years in a row. So, all right, maybe we thought we'd contend in 5 years, but we can contend now.
Yes.
But we need more.
Yes. And I think one of those areas is continuing to, find some more veteran guys. The other thing that I've talked about for the longest is more size at the wing position. Guys that are versatile, they find some more guys that can create their own shots or maybe create shots for others. Whenever you go from a season to the next, and what I had to learn, and when being traded, as much as I was traded, as long as people are upfront with you, you understand it's a business, and then hopefully you move to a team that gives you an opportunity to play again. And so this, they have to be realistic that in order to take the next step with the young guys that they have and talent that they have now, that they had to get better at the support positions. And so I would expect for them to be aggressive going into this offseason, realizing that, yes, you could have been better with Steven Adams and Brandon Clark. Yes, you could have, Ja wouldn't have hurt his hand at this moment. Yes, you, all of these things could have. But the reality is there were still things that were an issue all year mm-hmm. that continued to show themselves at the end of the year that need to be addressed.
Taylor Jenkins spoke, and he brought up a couple things that I found interesting. One, he was asked about if this team needs a veteran. And I know that's something that's discussed a lot. Does this team need a veteran? His answer basically was, we're exploring all options. We're going to take a look at everything. But then he also made it a point to say, I expect the three leaders of our team to be leaders on this team. Talking about Ja, Jaren, and Dez.
Yeah, but just the only thing I'm going to say to that is there's nothing that you can – there's something to say for experience and scars over guys just getting older and doing better at it. And so, yes, do you expect for them to be better leaders next year? Yes. But none of them have been far enough, played enough playoff rounds, done it enough to really be able to know exactly what it takes. And so it's always nice to have a voice of someone – that knows what it takes, but someone that also is playing while doing it. And so there are a lot of dynamics to what type veteran you would like to have. But I think it is always a positive to have a guy on your roster that can, number one, guys will listen to, and a guy that can give you some minutes and play, but someone that's been there and done it before.
Your answer, I think, answered my question. Because when Taylor said that about the three leaders on the team, and I thought, okay, well, when do these guys become veterans? Is it just going through more?
Going through more playoff series is you become a veteran in terms of maybe playing the game, but understanding the totality of the game, how to talk to the media, when to talk to the media, when you want to be brash and all that, how to do it in what way will be beneficial, what ways could be negative. There are intangibles that veterans always bring to a basketball team. I mean, there's some reason that Miami kept Udonis Haslem for 20 seasons and he only played 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he literally has played...
I think a good example of that I saw the other night, and I know this is just a horrible name for Grizzlies fans, but Andre Iguodala, when they show the Golden State bench, how much he is standing and talking to the younger guys, sitting between the younger guys, talking. He never shuts up
right
during the game.
Right.
So, I mean, that's now, granted, I agree with you. You'd prefer a guy that's playing.
Yeah, exactly. It's for this team, because this team is still trying. They got enough other guys that he can be the guy that does that. Udonis Haslem is the role. Those aren't just examples of what a veteran can bring to your team, but in terms of guys that are still playing, able to help, they don't have to be major minutes.
Well, we always go back to the guy that we had, Jay Crowder. A Jay Crowder type.
Doesn't have to start. You come off, you have a role, you play your minutes, you come out, but you can be a positive voice for a young team that's right there. You know, I feel like this team is right there. You just need that little push to put them over the top.
Yeah. Taylor also mentioned something. Oh, it was the big topic, I guess, with Zach Kleiman and with Taylor, was the maturity of the team.
Right.
Does this team need an overhaul? I don't know, cultural change of get away from being trying to be the villain?
I think it turned into being the villain. I think that it started out as just a confident group that was trying to establish themselves and trying to make a name for themselves. And so that was the best way to make a name for yourself, is to be loud, to be brash, to knock off bigger teams. And they've been able to do that by being at this position. I think what happens is there's a change that happens when you get to a certain point. So when they got to the point, and this is I think this goes for all teams that become good. You work your way to get up. Like, and teams love the underdog story. You're
Golden
the underdog.
State, man.
Exactly.
They were the best team to watch in basketball.
Everybody loved them. Then they got to the top, and then everybody's just, it's just innate. Like, oh, you winning, or you're doing whatever. They'll figure something out that's going to be, they'll hate on you for mm-hmm. something. And so what happened with this team was, they got to the point where now you're second in the West. Now you're a winning basketball team now. Now you have to carry yourself as the winning team. It is the Sacramento Kings, the Orlando Magic. Those are the teams that are behind where the Grizzlies had ascended to, Oklahoma City, that are trying to now get to where the Grizzlies are. So it's like, you don't have to carry yourself in the same way of trying to figure out a way to establish yourself. Now you got to figure out a way to stay there and get better. And whenever you get to that certain point, it's going to be a switch. You're going to have the people that love you that's going to keep riding with you. And then it's just all of those people that were just kind of on the outside, ancillary, now they're going to look at you differently. And I think that's what happened to this team. And they just continue to be who they were. The problem is, you just got to take the negatives with the positives.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the maturity side kicks in terms of, you just have to then understand at that point that everybody now is coming at us. We've put a target on our back because we are young, we are good, we are winning, we're doing it in our fashion. And so this in a grown man game, grown men now take offense to it.
Yeah.
And that's what happened to this team. Did nothing else other than Be who you are, but understand what comes along with it. That the game is going to be tougher than when nobody worried about who you were on the schedule. It was playing the Grizzlies, free T-shirts. If you free 10,000 T-shirts, mugs, cups, everything you want, free. Please come to the game. That's what it used to be for the Grizzlies. Mm-hmm. Now the tickets are exploding out of the air. We walking into the gym, Grizzlies uniforms all over. Things changed. So when things changed, that meant your mindset had to change. And I just don't know if they did a good enough job of being able to change that mindset to be ready for it.
And I mean, that all describes being on the road. I mean, and describes why the Grizzlies struggled away from home, because you need that so much more even on the road.
You need that little extra play on the road. When yeah. you are no longer just a team on the schedule, you are the team on the schedule. We turned into the team on the schedule for everyone.
Well, I think Taylor and Ja both mentioned yesterday, we need to get back to being the hunter.
Yes.
And not play as the hunted. And I think that kind of goes along those lines. Ja spoke and said he feels like he's in a good place, a happy place, and was disappointed. And, you know, talked about the maturity of the team, talked about stepping up as a leader and improving his game and all facets of the game. I would imagine Ja will come back hungry next year. We've seen Ja improve every single year. I would expect to see him improve.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of for him and in terms of basketball, all the other stuff, they'll figure out. He'll come back and do what he needs to do on and off the floor to be happy. And hopefully, whatever that is, he is legitimately happy. And but in terms of basketball, I think it is figuring out how to continue. Because when he came here, they needed him to do everything for the team to be successful. But with the growth of Jaren and the growth of Dez, how does he continue to be as great of a player he is, but then them also continue to be great along with him?
Right.
So that is always a test for excellent, for good players. The other thing is, for his game, is a mid-range jump shot. Not a floater. Something where you are off the dribble, stepping in, whether it's left foot, stepping square up, right, going left, stepping with his right foot, stepping in. I think that's a shot that would help him be able to get easier looks in a basketball game. Not having to keep someone on his back when he comes off a screen to then explode to either a floater or explode to finish all the way at the rim. But using the screen to where the screen knocks someone off and they're playing drop coverage, he takes one or two dribbles past the screen and just is able to rise up and shoot a pull-up jump shot. I think that would totally change his game in terms of the quality of shots that he'll be able to get.
Dez talked about his toe and how he's got to see the doctors and they'll figure out what to do with his toe. And, you know, he talked about wanting to improve as a leader as well. I thought Dez, his game, his overall game took a leap this year.
I think he grew more than anyone from year one to year two this past season in terms of his maturity in his game, his ball handling, the comfortability to be a ball handler at the NBA level. I know that he was a point guard and play guard when he was younger, but in terms of being able to do it at this NBA level with the speed and size, athleticism of the people that were defending him, and he had to do it being defended by better players this season. So a credit to him. And so I think continue to work on being able to ball handling in a crowd situation for him is what continue to work on. Playing in pick and rolls, because he did more pick and roll basketball this year than he did in his first year. But continuing to be really good at playing off the ball. And I would expect to see the Grizzlies, especially with he and Luke Kennard, be doing a little bit more motion, more things of screening away, more motion stuff that gets them the basketball on the move, because they both do a good job of shooting. And so it's an encouraging offseason for what Dez can look like going into year three, but also what Ja looks like going into, I think, year five.
Yeah.
Because a guy that I kind of liken Ja to, and you would like to see that growth, is De'Aaron Fox. With how De'Aaron Fox went from speedster, get to the rim, just kind of finishes around the basket, to now is a shoots the three very well, but is very good in the mid range with shooting pull up jump shots. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that backcourt, which can the two of them look at each other and say, well, why can't we be considered the best backcourt in the NBA?
Yeah. Luke Kennard, speaking of, it was a shame he couldn't play in Game 6.
Yeah, missed him a lot.
Yep, it's too bad. He was great in the time that he was with the Grizzlies, once he kind of got comfortable with shooting right. as much as they want him to. He was great, and he was great on the exit interview. When he finished, there were about 25 media people there. He walked up and down, fist bumped everyone, said thank you to every single person. That was kind of neat.
Yeah, man, especially – listen, you got it. A part of it is who he is,
mm-hmm.
and it's nice when you're able to find people that are just genuine that way. But it's also when you understand you come to a new city, you need to endear yourself to the people in that new city. Yes, he made the shots, but it's still the people that are going to be writing the articles. I want to say thank you for everything you do. I mean, it's mm-hmm. not. It's nothing. It's nothing that hurts you or makes you go out of your way. But it's just forward thinking for how you want to continue to shape narratives. And that's what I was saying with with not making those decisions, you allow others to shape narratives.
That's why Taylor mentioned all of us by name, the television crew. He's like, Brevin Knight, Pete Pranica, Fish, you know, you guys, just being with you all year, want to thank you. Yeah, we'll keep kissing your ass.
You didn't slide that 50 but no, it'll be good to see him in a full season.
Yeah, Jaren.
I thought Jaren took a big step this year. The playoffs, we didn't see the Jaren that we saw leading into the playoffs and after game one. What just wasn't the same player. But I thought he did a great job this year of being more demanding, wanting to be a bigger part of the offense and not just settling for being out there. Mm. Defensively, listen, you get Defensive Player of the Year for a reason. I thought his versatility over there on that end where he could switch. The shot blocking, whether it was second defender shot blocker or it was on the ball, shot blocker, whether it was blocking a big out on the floor, guard driving to the back. I mean, he did it all on that end of the floor, and so deservedly so won that. For him, I think is go back to is get physically stronger, continue to work on that aspect of things. And when he's getting to the basket, he's able to finish. I thought we saw with Anthony Davis was the finishes going to the basket that he's able to do over the average people, most guys he plays in the league, you aren't able to do against taller shot blockers. So see if he can have some more finishes where his extension is a little bit higher to finish on shots going to the basket. And something I've continued to say for a couple years is I still think he also needs to work on taking one more dribble when he makes moves to the basket. That gives him a more physical move instead of going into the two steps that then limits your physicality when you're on the offensive end. But other than that, now it's just fine-tuning your game for him because now his maturation is there. He knows exactly what to expect, and I think it's time for him to be ready to assume a bigger role on this team.
Dylan Brooks. His comments were interesting.
Yeah, they were. And I hopefully there is some way that if he does stay with the basketball team, whatever happens, that they're able to have some type of in-line understanding of what they expect from him and what the role will be here. Because I always say Dylan's a guy that his personality, the game, like his game is what you need. His bravado is what you need on your team. Every team needs that type player. A person that's going to get in the mud, They're going to be dirty. They do all the dirty work. Take whatever comes. You need that guy on your team. There has to be a understanding of what helps and what hurts the basketball team. What helps him may not help the team all the time. And that's even in game in terms of the physicality and taking a foul. Well, at that juncture, the team doesn't need you to take a foul because they need you to be in the game because you're important to the team. And so I think just situation is the biggest thing for Dylan moving forward. Continue to work on his perimeter shot. Don't abandon the drives to the basket. Like don't force teams to take him out what he is really good at, which is finishing in the paint, mid-range jump shots, and then let the threes come off of that. But he is a he's a player in the league that teams will likely have, aside from just needing to be able to take what you have given out. Like if it's fine to talk. If you're gonna be the talk guy, that's fine. It's fine. We just need you to back it up.
Yeah.
And I need you to be available to back it up. So you can't get close to the technicals where you miss games because of technicals. Can't put yourself in a position where you get flagrant twos and now you're ejected from games. Those things, those are the things that can't happen in the role when you are as important to a team that wants to win as he would be.
I had something to say and now I forgot of it.
I talked too long.
That's too bad.
I rambled.
This is what I was going to say. Because obviously everyone's talking about whether Dylan's going to be back or not. He's a free agent. I'm such a bad off-season person because I sit here and tell you, yes, I want to see aggressive off-season from Zach Kleiman and the crew, and I want them to go out and get us some players that are going to win us a championship. But don't get rid of any of my guys. Because I like my guys.
Hopefully it doesn't come across to me that I don't think that Dylan has to leave for him or the team to be successful. But I believe there has to be a definition of what your role is on this team. And
it feel that way, though? I mean, the way Zach Kleiman kind of wouldn't answer questions about Dylan yesterday and talking about needing to be on the same page. Dylan kind of made it appear that they weren't on the same page. Right. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. And obviously Grizzlies fans are upset because they lost the series. So everybody wants to get rid of, because they're blaming him. So everybody wants to get rid of him now. You know, and I always say it all the time, and I think you agree. When Dylan was good, the Grizzlies were a great team.
Yes. That after that Draymond Green situation, when he did the podcast and they came here and played, we saw the Dylan Brooks of old for about a month.
Yeah.
Like, it was locked in. There was no BS. Mm-mm. No outside anything. It was just this.
Yeah.
And that's when he's good, and that's why I said there has to be a defining of the role and an acceptance of it. And if not, then it can't work.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But it's going to be a fun offseason, I think. I'm expecting it to be pretty active. So
but that what forward. I just said, that defining of a role and accepting, that goes for every player in the league.
Sure.
I mean, at whatever level. Well, this is what I expect of you. You say no. Okay, well then, I got to figure out, can you go somewhere else or you can't play?
Yeah. Do you have a minute to talk about the other series real quick?
Yeah.
Okay. In the East, we have Miami, the 8 seed. They lead 1-0 over in the second round, 1-0 over the New York Knicks. They don't surprise anymore.
No, literally when the Knicks were up early, I was like, well, Miami's going to come back. How about that? The 8 seed that lost the first play-in game, that had to win the second one just to make sure they get into the playoffs, then knocks off the number 1 seed in 5 games. Is down early in the first. You just feel like, oh yeah, they're all right.
They're good.
They're fine. I pointed to I was watching it with my son Donovan, and I pointed close to the end of the first half. I think Miami couldn't score or whatever, but I think the Knicks only had 50, 51, 52 points or something. And I was like, see this number right here? He's like, well, why are you worrying about that stuff? Because this number, the Knicks didn't take advantage of anything. Miami they haven't started to make any shots yet.
Yeah.
And once they figured out making shots. To me, being a basketball enthusiast, like loves the sport of basketball, forget all of this hoopla, extra stuff, just basketball.
Mm-hmm.
It's just fun to watch a team be able to come up with a plan, execute it, and no matter what, still adjust within the plan, the execution, and make things work. And they find guys. Why you need vet guy? Kyle Lowry, who's been on last leg, can't play, all this, just trying to figure out how to play, comes through huge for them. When they're down, Hero, they're down. Oladipo, they're down. Jimmy Butler at the end of the game was just on one leg.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why the Knicks didn't just pick him out every time and go at him, but they just, Eric Spoelstra just, he's going to go down as one of the greatest coaches to ever coach in the NBA.
No doubt. Philadelphia and Boston, they start tonight.
Interested to see if Embiid, is Embiid out?
I don't know.
You got to see if, because if he's,
I saw a report earlier, and I can't remember what it was.
Right. If
sorry.
So if he's in or out, plays a big deal. But I just think Boston is a really, really good basketball team that has a bunch of really good basketball players. And so I have the Celtics winning the East and going from there. But I think the Embiid situation will play a big part of what happens with that series.
Man, I can't find it now. I was looking for it, but I found some other good stuff. Snoop Dogg might buy the Senators, the Ottawa Senators. It's kind of fun.
Snoop getting in on the NHL
game. Yeah, why not? All right, in the West, we have the Denver Nuggets. They beat Phoenix.
Smacked them.
And Denver suddenly is the odds-on favorite to win that series when they were not when the series started.
Well, everything is such a instant reaction. It's like they played well. Oh, they're about to win the series. And I think they did. First and foremost, what you have to do is you got to win
game. Murray?
Well, you got to win game one. When you're the home team and you have home court advantage, you got to win game one.
Mm-hmm.
That at least keeps your momentum where it is. You lose game one, you're on your heels right off the back. Your mind thought is we got to win a road game before you win. So there's a lot of other things that go through your mind. They took care of that. And the guys you said, Jamal Murray has been playing good. I said it before. The reason why I was a little bit hesitant on Denver was because of Jamal Murray. I'm going to continue to watch. And if he has to throw, same way Giannis threw that egg in my face when I said, I don't know if Giannis could be a superstar.
Yeah.
He threw it in my face.
Right in the face.
Oh.
In the face.
In the face. And so still stands to see Jamal Murray. Good basketball player, not very good, but I didn't know if he was good enough to get them over the top to be a championship team. But right now, shut up, Brevin.
Golden State and the Lakers.
Mm.
Which assholes you want? I apologize for that. I didn't mean to do that. I hope the kids aren't in the car, y'all.
I'd say at the end of the Lakers series, man, I was always a fan of Darvin Ham, and I'm a fan of guys that I competed against. Steve Kerr, he's been there, done it before. So I'm going to pull for Darvin Ham to be able to for he and the Lakers to be able to get a W. But I think it's going to be a tall task for them to be able to beat a healthy Golden State Warriors.
Man, that is the second year in a row that Golden State has just been healthy at the right time. I mean, yeah. How big are Wiggins and Payton?
Payton freaking had four. I think he had four blocked shots.
I mean,
in the second, he blocked the 3-point shot and saved it and tipped it back in at the same time. Yeah. I mean, so what the Lakers were able to do to us was really clog the game up. And what the Warriors will put pressure on them is they're going to have to play a little bit more extended, and they're going to have to move a lot more defensively. So that'll be a test to see how well their defense can stand up in the half court.
Yeah, I'm rooting for the Lakers, but I'm rooting for the Nuggets to beat them all, because Phoenix doesn't deserve it.
Well, I know you think Phoenix. I think if we go back to our first episode at the beginning of the year, I think I picked the Lakers to win it.
Yeah, and I probably thought that was crazy.
And I think he said I was crazy. Yeah. But I said it was, the biggest reason I said it was because of all of what people said about LeBron James.
Yeah.
The year, last year, what happened to the team was done, this, all of these things. And then the ESPN thing came out and he was number 9 or 10 on mm-hmm. the top players. And I was like, I think something's going to happen with them. So even though the things went happen as it did, they changed the team. I gotta stay on who I thought was gonna win the championship this year from the beginning of the year.
Yeah. All right. That's gonna do it for us this week. We'll be with you through the playoffs, right? We can do that. We'll be through the NBA playoffs. Not every other day.
we'll still have thoughts.
Yeah. So we'll still have stuff. So we'll be back not too long. Maybe like when these series, shift, that's when we'll come on. We'll do that here on Night Court. So thanks for joining us, and thanks for joining us throughout the season. And we'll continue here on Night Court now that we have a lovely studio. And, and it's going to be a wonderful summer. So we're excited about it. Hatchet Man and Mowing Man will be able to share our stories. Brevin's will last a month.
I'll be ready.
All right. For BK, I'm Fish. Thanks for joining us here on Night Court. Listen, keep listening. We'll be back again real soon.
Peace.